Archer Shepp and Mal Waldron with Left Alone. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Thursday, April the 2nd. And Lasana Jaspara has been describing the heart-wrenching anguish and utter frustration his family has been experiencing since the night of November the 6th, 2014. It was when he learned that his son, 20-year-old Sinkyu, also known as Q Jaspara, a budding game designer, was shot dead by a police officer in Jackson, Tennessee, near the condominium complex where Lasana and his son lived. Q was shot in the back. A single bullet wound indicated that the bullet's trajectory was downward. It pierced Q's body while he was prone on the ground. The medical examiner ruled his death a homicide. The family's repeated efforts to get information and official documents from the police department and the prosecutor's office about the circumstances of Q's death, which Lasana calls an execution, were met with silence, non-cooperation, and indifference, he says. And both a preliminary investigation and an open and shut grand jury probe likewise were unknown and off limits to them, Lasana said. They learned of the grand jury proceeding only after District Attorney Jerry Woodall announced on March the 4th that Officer Raymond Duane Bond would not be indicted. In this The fourth part of an interview with Lasana Jaspara, we're going to learn some more about the details of the family's pursuit of justice, his accusation that there has been here massive official misconduct and cover-up, and the activist work he says he's determined more than ever to do to stop the rising tide of police killings of young men of color across the country. And once again, Lasana Jaspara, thank you so much for being with us today.
Once again, thank you for having me sharing this.
Well, thank you. Where do we begin today in terms of your situation as it stands right now? There has been, you called it an open and shut a grand jury proceeding. You said you didn't know anything about it until this announcement was made on March the 4th that there will be no indictment of the police officer. What has happened since then? Take us through what the family has been going through since then.
What has happened since then has been direct and formal requests for information, records, evidence, essentially all that is relevant and that should be available now that they insist they have made a determination that tonight and there is no such investigation going on. We've done that via our attorney. The same letter from our attorney we have had submitted via them by fax, via certified mail. We've also faxed it here locally. And I think, as I mentioned in a previous conversation, at least two visits personally to the office, I was denied entry. One by the second one by the attorney, the district attorney himself, who introduced himself as the general. I say that because the tone and manner was as if he expected a salute. And since then, I know that Sinque's mother, Dr. Curtin, has indicated that she contacted the office. Of course, this was by phone, and basically got some information that essentially still did not produce anything. So here is where we are. It's April now. My son was executed in 2006, and we still have no official report. We still have nothing in the way of documentation, nothing from either the city office, the police department, or the district attorney, all of which we have contacted officially and requested information.
While this is going on, have you also pursued anything at the federal level?
We have had those discussions with the attorney, and we've had those discussions in terms of what direction to go with respect to that. We have contacted some offices on the federal level.
But in the meantime, you maintain that there is a massive cover-up going on here, and that the death of Q was in fact an execution,
mm-hmm.
and you are not able to mount any kind of an assault, if you will, on the system yet, because you are without essential facts. How is the family coping all the while that this is happening? What is going on?
Well, I can say this. The family is determined in its effort, most definitely, and is pursuing every venue that we can to continue this. One, to continue to try to get the story out, because that cover-up effort, that collusion between the media, the local authorities, and the police, continues. They still are determined to keep a lid on this as much as possible. So we continue with that respect and when getting this out, and we find, a growing base of, first of all, understanding and awareness, and then support among community members as we work our way through them and enlighten them about Q's execution and what's going on since. So that's been it. I mean, really the kind of just stay steadfast in our efforts. Because we know that this is going to break through, and what they're doing, won't last. They have an interest in doing this because obviously they want to limit what recourse we might take. But we're aware of that, and it's not going to work. So we pursue. We continue to pursue.
What specifically it reinforces your view that there is a massive cover-up here and misconduct, official misconduct?
You're asking me what convinces me
of that?
What
leads you to believe this?
I go back to the night of the evening of my son's murder. From the start, misleading and false information from the police directly. Then, of course, there was the whole episode that I described with the gang of white policemen at the hospital and the obstruction, the physical obstruction. Because I realized in that also, while I may have been primarily focused at the moment, in the heat of that moment, on, my son, seeing my son, what is the state, and so forth. That was serving their purposes to cover, a great deal more than just, my where my son was or what condition he was at that moment. So I understand that now, and of course that became that started to become very clear when I made the trip down to the hospital the next day and got the EMT report, which told me that he had been shot in the back, which prior I had been told differently by the cops. And I had not had an opportunity to have a real conversation, a question and answer with any medical personnel there. The ME, who I feel was totally complicit in terms of not being on point and being remaining with my son's body during the entire time as she was required to, but the police were there. The police handled the body. This is acknowledged by the ME herself, and this is improper. So, recall I discussed their reluctance at first to even let me in the room with my son. When I, after a while, pleaded, I wanted to at least just kind of be able to lay hands on my son, that evening. Even then, when they finally relented on that, it was with additional police in the room and with the instruction that I could only touch this one, exposed hand, on him, they were determined that I did not, discover anything else about, wounds on the body. I'm very much convinced. And then when you come out of all of that, just that night of that episode, which was very obvious, it's just the way that it has been treated and not treated at the same time. The refusal to discuss is closed beyond that first night that I revealed it, that my son was even shot in the back. Media, despite having the documentation, which I gave them when I got it, whenever they would revisit the story, this would never be mentioned. But they would play up the same little deceptive spiel that the police put out about, my son attacking the officer, as he pulled up and got out of the car, which, of course, now even their own edited video disproves or certainly does not support. So you have all of that, and even as this continues, even in the wake of all this, what we deal with, both with respect to media and the authorities here. So we make our way in our efforts in terms of what we've done to bring attention, and these are some public things, demonstrations. Are working with alternative media and just networking and using the social media to get the truth out and garner the support necessary to pursue justice.
Let's talk about a very interesting coincidence, and that is the town itself in Jackson, Tennessee, being a place where a number of families you have discovered who have had a connection to this kind of experience. Could you talk about that?
Yes, very, very interesting, Utrice. Very, very, very interesting. And you use the word coincidence, and I have used it too, but only to express my lack of belief in coincidence in this universe. I don't believe in coincidence. And what we find is, yes, we find here in the same place at the same time under very similar circumstances families with an immediate family member that has fallen victim to this this terror that we've seen in recent months of executions or unjustified murders by police of blacks, and particularly black males. There is here last name is Crawford, and I'm trying to remember, I think it was John Crawford, the young man who was gunned down on camera or on cameras in the Walmart in Ohio. His father, John Crawford Sr., lives here. We have discovered and have been in communication with. The Michael Brown family has close relatives here, an aunt, and even a cousin, I discovered, even who bears the same name, Michael Brown. They live here. There is the family of a victim in 2007, and who I always emphasize, whose murder or execution mirrors, in a lot of ways, my son's execution, the Ellison family. This was 2007.
You need to I just want to say, we're getting a little bit of a disturbance on your line, so maybe you could talk a little louder, so just to compensate for it.
Okay, I'll let me adjust some volume, because I'm actually in a spot where, there's nothing else in here or going on in here. But, I was just saying that in addition to Mike Brown's family, John Crawford family, there was a family, the Ellison family, who actually, this was in 07, the family here, and that's a victim. His name was Fred Ellison, went by Frazier Ellison, whose execution mirrors, in a lot of ways, my son. He was shot in the back and in compliance. And police put a lot of effort into lying about this, covering it up. I think the family is even still, at least when I talk with the father, his characterization is that it has never really been resolved, but it's another case too where you saw news reports and accounts played down. You also saw a lack of the kind of support that you would expect from agencies and organizations that represent themselves as advocates in the black community. And that's another aspect of this that we have touched on, but we could talk some more about. In addition, there is another family, a young man who was killed and claimed that a gun was used and pulled, but this has never been proven, and the accounts from family members and relatives is that he never even carried, let alone owned one. This is a family of Elton Hampton, who was said to have had some mental issues. But it's another one of a police shooting of an unarmed man, black man, and unjustified. You have a history here is what it is clearly revealing. And what I have learned is I have, done some research in the wake of my son's execution. There's a history. There's a pattern. It runs deep. So I go back to my point about not believing in coincidence. Circumstances a lie in a way to produce certain outcomes, and so it's not a coincidence, I think, that we find what we find here.
The officer involved in the killing of Q is an African-American officer. The families are African-American. You're African-American. Your son was African-American. The dynamic suggests that it has parted ways in many instances of, the racial dynamic that normally is expected or that normally applies in these situations where you usually have an African-American or Latino male victim and a white police officer. That has been the general trend. What are your feelings about this? Does it matter to you more? Does it resonate with you more deeply that the killer of your son was an African American police officer?
Well, let me say this. First of all, remember that what we are dealing with is biased, manipulated, evidence that the police have put out to the extent that they have been forthcoming with anything. We do not rule out, Yatrice, the possibility that there was white officer or officers on the scene as a part of this encounter, and that cannot be ruled out based on what has been produced evidence-wise from the police. And I say that also because some who have seen that or seen some other elements suggest that that might have been the case. But to that, to your question and to that point, I say this. It is still part of the same dynamic. You have a black officer named as a shooter, and I think I mentioned in an earlier conversation, Yatrice, that even that, I don't think we can even say conclusively, even though they've only mentioned one officer and one name, even when you look at the edited video, you can clearly see at least two officers involved in that scene. Only one has ever been named or discussed. So we don't rule that out. But what we don't rule out also is the fact that, yes, this is still very much a part of that same dynamic that we're seeing, where essentially black males, especially on site, viewed as criminal just based on their color and out of place, and particularly in a place where they are more accustomed to seeing where we live, a retired white and so forth. So you are criminal on site. And I think that all played into what led to my son's execution. So the fact that you have or may have a black or a person of color pulling the trigger does not change that. And especially in a situation like this where I have described the situation where this is still a very much antebellum plantation-like social political environment here, where despite the fact that blacks are virtually half of the population, it is very definitely lopsided to the other extreme in terms of political representation, what you see in terms of media, control of media, economic opportunity, and enfranchisement, wealth, this representation, it is very much consistent with what you might, you know, have expected, you know, 40 years ago. So you do have those same dynamics. And again, remember I said, okay, it was at that hospital. This was an entire fleet, or I say gang is the word I use, of white officers basically acting on behalf of whoever had pulled the trigger in that execution. So we're looking at the same dynamics. And I'll refer you and your listeners to, for example, the study on the Department of Justice study on Philadelphia came out recently, where you have much more in the way of numbers of blacks being represented both in the police force and in government. But you still see the same dynamics, you see the same statistical outcomes in terms of who is being victimized by police shootings and unjustified police shootings, disproportionately black, because you're looking at the same dynamics. The institution is structured and serving a certain purpose, and that is not in the best interest of blacks in these communities. So no, the fact that they have mentioned the black, referred to a black officer on the scene, I think is one of the ways that they have tried to play it down, and also, you know, try to make it as if it is less significant, which most definitely, you know, I challenge that we will make it less significant if it's, you know, victim and shooter of the same race or ethnicity. I think that's false. I think that's just a method of distraction from what the real issue is. And like I said, it's just putting blackface on what is an issue of white supremacy and subjugation of the black community, despite their large numbers. But keeping them in a subjugated and subordinate position in this community, using law enforcement to help do that.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. This is our fourth interview with Lassana Jaspora, the father of Sinkyu Jaspora, who was killed by police in Jackson, Tennessee, where they lived, on November the 6th, 2014. And Lasana since then has been trying to get justice in this matter. Could we talk about what this tragedy has done to embolden you to continue the fight for justice?
Well, it's done just that, Utrice. I do come from a background of social justice activism and so forth anyway, and certainly had been on point with others as we had seen some of these earlier executions and other kind of social justice issues. There's nothing that kind of gets you set to be in this position for your own child, for your son. And Q was my only child, my only son. And because spiritually we still do remain very close. So yes, that is just it, Utrice. I mean, I as far as I'm concerned, my son is now among the martyrs. Black martyrs who have fallen victim of the racist tendencies that continue to plague this nation, this society, and he took a bullet in the cause. And my role now is to certainly take up the fight, to the fullest and to the end on his behalf, which I recognize is, at the same time, on behalf of our community, of our people, and really of this nation. I mean, if this nation has any real chance of survival, this is one area in which we must find justice. Otherwise, I really don't see us holding this together as a nation. I don't. So my mission, takes on that type of urgency. Yes, I'm fighting for my son and justice, but it's bigger, and I recognize that. And I hope that more of us, black and white or whatever, see that this needs to be, the justice needs to be rendered, or the track we're on is certainly one that's headed for a much, much greater tragedy in this nation.
You referred to Q as a martyr, and in that regard, there is an effort afoot to honor martyrs, as you call them. Tell us about that.
Yes. Everyone knows, April 4 is the anniversary of the Martin Luther King assassination. Which is also here in Tennessee, by the way. So on that, in conjunction with that, I and others are putting together is a recognition of Black Martyrs, and because they're Black Martyrs Day on that same day, actually that weekend, and actually throughout this month, we will be doing some things. Yes, that's what we want to do. We want to recognize pay homage to the struggle and to those who have struggled and fallen victim throughout the years, throughout the ages, in struggling for our liberation, our freedom, our citizenship, just our humanity on this planet, in this country. And like I said, my son is now among those ancestors and those martyrs. So we recognize them on this day, with several others in other cities across the country, we'll be standing in solidarity, one way or another, recognizing them and doing something to honor their memory, but also to really try to engage and move our communities to action in this justice effort, in this ongoing effort for justice. So, yeah, Black Martyrs Day, this Saturday, April 4th, particularly in Jackson, what we will be doing is really some community activity, some community education. We plan some seminars, workshops, some work within the community to really kind of enlighten, engage, and get folks really constructively engaged in this justice effort, which as we need to be. We need to see this as an imperative justice effort, and so we're gonna use it in that respect.
Would you be amenable to taking some questions soon?
No, I don't have any problem with that.
Okay, so I'll just alert the audience. It's 888-874-4888 to ask your questions. I'm sure you have many. And while you do that, Lasana, I want to ask about this question and the notion that this fix that has to occur in our society, we come back to, again, another usual profile, that it is the oppressed people, the people who are victimized, having to take on the inordinate burden of setting things right. To what degree, even in Jackson, Tennessee, are you seeing involvement of whites in this question of police brutality and excessive use of force and an out-of-control judicial and prosecutorial system? Are you seeing, as you go about this issue of advocating for change and for seeking justice, are you seeing a one-sided thing here, or are you seeing evidence that the entire community is arriving at this point of understanding that it is not just a black people's problem or a Latino people's problem? It is a societal problem.
Well, minimally, minimally, because again, in your case, I cannot overemphasize this for people who may not be able to appreciate the specific circumstances here. I cannot overemphasize this point, no matter how much I say it. This is a place that you step back socially and politically about, 4, in some respects, maybe 5 decades. And I mean that, and it's an observation that not only I have made, but, some folks who have spent their lives here, will concede that, yes, you're right. So it's very minimal in the sense that all of this push is a struggle, because we have to kind of like go, it's almost like going like neighborhood to neighborhood, person to person. And yet when you are able to get them, folks will see it. But it's that kind of thing, so it's minimal. And what you find in that kind of arrangement, why it is the way it is basically to keep, particularly the white community, perceiving itself as set apart and set, say, above or different from what is going on, in this black community, and so that any of the issues or whatever, or those are theirs, and we only have to control them to the extent that, they spill over and maybe kind of affect us. And that goes back to the idea of trying to minimize or reduce the significance of this by playing on the idea that, there's a black cop and a black victim, that making it insignificant in this racial scheme or whatever, or less significant. You're working against that kind of thing more so. So no, you don't see very many, even though, again, it's the kind of thing when folks, you talk and they see something, in what video has come out, and you share with them more of the story, you get some kind of supportive comment, at times. But this is not a community that invites, I think, that kind of activism. They're more determined on the false image of, well, we get along here. As a matter of fact, some folks have even made that comment. And I say, and that's false, because it's not getting along, it's going along. Essentially, you have a repressive system where, like I said, blacks are pretty much a subordinate class, despite their numbers here. And so long as you go along with that, you get along. Challenge in any way, and then you start to see the real and the real inequities, and that is what part of their repression is determined to keep covered. So that is a big part of the struggle, Utrecht, really trying to get this community to acknowledge and then be engaged. And you're right, most of that has to fall upon us, because if we wait for the oppressor or those who benefit from that oppressive arrangement to do it, I mean, there'll just be more of us dying off before that happens.
As we get to the listeners' questions, I just want to ask, what information can you share about that will give people an idea of how to help if they wish to do so?
The thing that we started out first and foremost really wanting to do is, we knew the big thing was just to get Q's story out there, get the truth out about the fact this young man had been executed by police. He'd been shot in the back, lying face down, and shot from a distance in the back. So as we work social media and have found opportunities in a lot of alternative media to get the story out, or folks are interested in learning more about the story, that's a big thing, sharing that story. We do have some things that more directly for folks who want to support a justice effort to do that. We have, and we're continuing, the online petition calling for the prosecution of all of those involved. That's an online petition that we have at change.org. Prosecute the Jackson, Tennessee police for murder of unarmed black man. Links to that are at the Facebook site. Facebook site Justice for Sin Q Justfora, and the Facebook site the letter E L, and then D J A H. We also have something we hadn't done very much, but recognizing that in our ongoing effort, the need to garner some resources to continue, we have started a GoFundMe effort, which is online. It's a GoFundMe, and there are links to that as well. At the pages, but and I'm trying to remember the exact name of GoFundMe. I know it starts with Q for Justice, so we are doing that. We share the contact information for folks who may be able to help in terms of getting the story out, getting folks engaged in their communities. Because we're into the Black Martyrs Day, we are having folks come in from different states around the country, some to stand with us. But as I said, some people will stand in solidarity in one way or another, wherever they are. And we're asking at the very least on that day, just to, as a symbolic show of solidarity, black armband or a black ribbon or a black attire some kind on that day. So there are a lot of ways to do that. Contact information, through those Facebook sites, and then, of course, the email that we use for everything related to this is Q for Justice. That's the letter Q, the number 4, on justice at Gmail, Q4Justice@gmail. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Utrecht, I may have given my number out on your show before, because I don't have any problem with that. The number is now pretty much largely dedicated, to that. And that cell number is
219-314-5053.
Okay.
All right, we go to your calls. Hello, you're on the air with Lasana Jaspora. Hello?
Who?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, I am? I didn't hear my name. Oh, this is Clara in Philadelphia. Thank you.
Hello, Clara.
Hi, how are you? I'm calling. I have a brief question, but it's really a rhetorical one, because I want to state what I think. I would ask... I don't know his name. I only remember the name of your son. But anyway, I wanted to say that I believe that what we're fighting, what we have to realize now, is that racism is one aspect of the oppression, the terrible oppression that everyone in this country faces. What is being done is the media is presenting all of these crimes against people, black people, as the only assault that they're launching. So that people who are in other groups tend to feel, oh, relatively safe. And also it pits us against one another. I think that is part of the plan. The main thing, the main problem, the main problem we have is really the fascism, lack of any kind of citizen involvement that in terms of citizens having any say in anything, because the big corporations and those who run them and those above them have total control of the media. So people don't know what's going on unless they happen to listen to PRN. Now, as far as what I think we must do, I think we must bring this down. Now, how do we do it? I think we have to close it down. Now,
do you happen to have a question for Lasana?
I want to ask you, Lasana, do you believe there's any future for us in this system? I mean the ordinary citizen. I'm not talking about just black people. What do you see as the future of this system?
Thank you.
Well, I think it does relate to something said earlier in the discussion. I think what you're talking about, and you make some good points, I think justice pervades all of that. Justice pervades, social justice pervades every aspect of our existence. And it's only through that do I see a future for this nation. And I mean that. And actually, this is not something that comes to realization for me just since my son's execution. That is the point. And I think it speaks to what you're getting at. It speaks to what I've been talking about with regard to my son. If we have any long-term future in this nation, it will have to see to social justice for everyone here. Or I agree with what you're implying. This society will not stand.
Thank you, Clara, for your question. Hello, you're on the air with Lasana Jaspora.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Sister Leia calling from New York. How are you, Idris?
Fine, thank you.
I would like to ask a question of Brother Jaspora, and first I'd like to give my condolences.
Thank you.
On Idris's program, several times Attorney Alton Maddox has indicated that justice can be served by these types of killings being pursued as class actions,
mm-hmm.
since the police departments in various parts of the country are murdering a class of people, black people. So I was wondering, in your considerations with your legal team, whether you have considered taking this into a class action, or whether you're going to go about it singly.
Thank you.
That consideration most definitely has been discussed in on several levels, and not just the legal. What exactly our particular case would go into, that I guess we're not prepared to say precisely, you know, which route. But that has definitely been considered, and I agree. Maddox is someone that I've been trying to get into some discussions with. Have not yet at this point, though.
Thank you, Lynn. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say if he wanted to get in touch with Alton Maddox, you can call the Freedom Party office in New York. And the number
right, I do have that number. I've called. I just haven't made contact just yet, okay. But I have called. You know.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, you're on the air with Lasana Despora.
Hello, you, Trace. This is DX from Los Angeles. How are you?
Fine, thank you. DX, your question?
Yes. I wanted to say to Brother Lasana that I really empathize with you as someone who has lost someone really close to him to unexpected circumstances or unnatural causes. I don't think most people know the pain that you go through when that happens. I have a son that's 16, and we lost his mother about 12 years ago, my wife, so I understand what you're going through as far as that. And also, I don't know what I would do if something happened to my son, you know. So, but my question to you, and I know you're an activist. My question to you, I want you to know that this is not in any type of accusatory manner or anything like that. But I don't know if you went into what you had been doing locally or anything, any causes you had been involved in, but do you think maybe this may have been like some sort of revenge on you for getting involved in something you shouldn't have or they think you shouldn't have? I don't want to sound conspiratorial, but I do believe that some of these killings we see around the country, some of them are kind of like targeted killings. So if you could just answer that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I'll say that that has been suggested by more than a few people, and I'll say some of what I have been involved in certainly is known here, and there are certainly among those elements that I've identified before who are actively working against us, certainly those folks are familiar with, you know, some of the efforts that I have made here and certainly my attitudes toward the social-political system here. That has been suggested, it's something, you know, that I've contemplated. And to be honest, I've even had, you know, my own visions regarding my son's death and my proximity to him, that might get something like that. But I don't know. That has been suggested by a number of people.
Thank you, DX. Hello, you're on the air with Lasana Jaspora. Hello, you're on the air. Okay. Well, let's just review why we await calls at 888-874-4888. To contact Lasana Jaspora by email, it's Q4 Justice at gmail.com. A phone contact number is 219-314-5053. And there is a GoFundMe page, Q4Justice. As we wrap up here, where do you plan to go next? What is the immediate plan? After you, you know, April 4, you're going to stage a local effort to honor martyrs as a way of doing community education and outreach. What is the immediate future for you, Lasana?
The immediate future definitely involves keying in on our legal efforts, our decisions. I'll add too. There is a case of a young white male, same age range as Q, just recently. His family for the attorney filed a suit here. Interesting, because only now am I realizing this young man. He was shot in the back. Again, police had lied about that. So again, the pattern. But in theory, the only way you get any type of retribution is something that, you know, brings some type of punitive recourse to these agencies. So, like I said, I know most definitely we will be focusing, we'll be homing in on our legal effort at this point, you know, in addition to continuing what we've been doing, but that will be a particular focus.
Well, I want to thank you so much for the privilege of entering your life, and more so at the point of tragedy, an unspeakable tragedy like this. You were doing so generously to give us an insight as to how an awful situation like this, we read about it as headlines, as news stories, we see it, you know, it's a 10, 15 seconds of news, but it is a lifetime of pain and hurt and anguish and sacrifice for the families involved. It is a story, unfortunately, that has been repeated in the African-American and Latino communities, particularly in recent years. It seems to be, as I said in the introduction, a rising tide. More and more young men every day we see reports about this, and we can only now understand that beyond the headlines of it, these are lasting tragedies for the families involved. The beautiful thing, if I may use the word, is that you are standing up in a way that we would not expect, because most people just literally just, you know, recede into the shadows and deal privately with their pain. But you have decided that you will make a stand here in CINCU's honor and in the honor of all of those people who have been killed, you use the word executed, by police, and you are standing up also for the reorganization of this apparatus of control that we call the police department and the authority of the state. We are standing up for the corruption, against the corruption that pervades this entity, and we've seen it over and over again. So if there is a good thing, if I could use that word, that has come out or is coming out of this tragedy, it is that you are emboldened to do more to bring justice, not just for Q, but for everybody, families that you've told us about, even right there in Jackson, Tennessee, a very macabre kind of coalition of people who have been directly linked to victims of police crimes. So I want to thank you so much for your generosity in giving us access to that and for giving us an example as well of the
correct
way to deal with
this. Thank you for the attention to my son's story, Eutrice. Thank you for that.
All right. We will stay in touch, of course, and any updates, certainly, we would want to know. All right. Thank you so much for being with us, Lasana. That brings us to the end of our program today. Thank you so much for listening. I hope it sheds some kind of light on what happens when people are dealing with these things. And you see the concerted effort to basically deny justice. And when you hear these stories, think about the official stories that we get, you know, the reports that we get from the U.S. Department of Justice or the reports that we get from grand juries and their decisions not to indict. You see the link between a quest for justice and an insistence on not giving it. Keep it right here at PRN.FM, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.